For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Confederations Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Today, Super Eagles check Tahiti, but Oceania's 11 entertain the crowds. We salute the Iron Warriors and their canoe paddle goal celebration and ask, check Tahiti. The Jokinir have him alongside Kebab in midfield for Newcastle. Elsewhere, there's more Looney Tune fallout from St James's. Post tweets and a look forward to Wednesday's action, Italy, Japan, Brazil, Mexico, all in today's Confederations Cup Football Daily. Confederations Cup Football Daily today with Paul McInnes.
Hello there, James.
Hey, sounding hearty.
Thank you. Feeling hale.
Good. That's good news. You're just off a plane from Galicia.
Yes, where I went on a mammoth, exorbitant drinking session, known as a gathering of the McInnes clan.
All right then. Michael Cox of ZonaMarking.net.
Hello, James.
Hi there. What were you up to yesterday?
I was watching Tahiti, Nigeria.
Were you? Yeah. Were you really?
Well, I was half watching it.
All right. Half watching bits.
Well, I think we all wanted Tahiti to score, didn't we?
We did.
So once they conceded after 3 minutes, it was that's all I was really focusing on, really.
Yeah. Okay. And you got what you came for.
Yeah, it was a good header.
And you got more, I'm hoping. But let's just say hello to Simon Burnton, who didn't see any of Tahiti, Nigeria, because you were at the theatre celebrating your wife's birthday.
Yes, I mainly saw Book of Mormon.
All right. What was it like?
It was really good.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. I'm all caught up highlight wise.
Oh, did you catch the highlights?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess 3 minutes into a match when a clearance rebounds off a referee to an opposition player whose shot hits two defenders, wrong foot to the goalkeeper, and flies in. I mean,
I think flying in stretches it a little bit. It was more like slowly bobbles past the despairing keeper.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that wasn't like the worst own goal of the game either. There was a lot of pluckiness there, but there was also a lot of comedy too.
There certainly was. Yesterday, you did a great job of talking them up as the potential goal disasters, Tahiti. But to be fair, they weren't bad enough to be funny, but they weren't really good enough to compete either, were they? Which is a little bit disappointing from the kind of rubberneckers' perspective. But great to see their goal and that outpouring of celebration and a canoe paddle celebration.
Yeah, on a couple of betting sites, there was a market before the game or before the tournament on whether they would score at all in the competition.
Right.
And they were odds on not to score. So it was quite a surprise that they did manage it. I thought it was a good header.
Mm.
Goalkeeper didn't. In fact, at both ends, the goalkeeper was quite dodgy. I do quite like goalkeepers at international level because there's no real way around it, is it? At club level, you can buy a goalkeeper.
Mm.
International side, if you've got a problem with midfield or up front, you can tactically change things. But if you've got a bad goalkeeper, you've just got a bad goalkeeper.
I think there was something charming about that goal celebration, by the way. The idea that they would defer to their professional player, that he's the one who has the goal celebration. We're not going to waste our time developing our own goal celebrations because, you know, we're humble. And if we score one goal, then the man who's been working it in their league earn for the past 10 years and refining it will follow him.
Right.
Which just says a thing about the cohesive nature of that Tahiti squad.
Well, it was a special moment. A goal for all the Pacific Ocean, as football cliches called it. You mentioned, though, the Nigeria's goalkeeper didn't look the best. Certainly their right back was a bit questionable as well. And all in all, they weren't all that convincing, were they?
No, I'm not convinced Nigeria are a very good team. They did well at the Africa Cup of Nations, but I thought two of their best players were Emenike, the forward, and Victor Moses, who played on either flank, and they're without both of them. And I thought, despite the fact I'm not sure if they created goal-scoring opportunities or if they just found themselves in goal-scoring opportunities, but they continually wasted chances, tried to do too much, went round the goalkeeper about four times and were thwarted. So I'm not convinced they're a great side.
Mm. Though the preparation for this match was uniquely shambolic.
That's true.
And you would hope that having been in the right time zone for a few more days, by the time they play their next, they may potentially improve.
Yeah.
My Nigerian colleague Lamry insists they're just warming up.
Okay. All right. And possibly Tahiti are too for their big one with Spain. Which will be fascinating, points out Showmaster, because they meet again in the group stage of the Beach Football World Cup in Tahiti. Very much on home turf in every sense there.
Well, what was quite funny about the match, and Tahiti might not have been as bad as some people were predicting, and the scoreline not as emphatic, but it was quite unique and interesting for a team to win 6-1 and then talk afterwards about how disappointed they were with the scoreline and how many chances they missed. And ultimately, that won't help their goal difference.
No.
Probably, only scoring the six.
Yeah, that's true. You were surprised it wasn't more?
Well, I'd be surprised if other teams don't score more.
Right, OK. We shall see. We shall see. Plenty of matches to come in this Confederations Cup. Quick break for some posts before we move on to Wednesday's treats. William T. Fox, much discussion, he says, of the lack of the B within the Tahitian alphabet. However, which is presumably called the alphabet. I don't know. Alphete, perhaps. However, no satisfactory answer to the Bora Bora. My pronunciation today is Kinnear-esque, isn't it? No satisfactory answer to the Bora Bora pronunciation question from Sunday's podcast. Dave Whelan is my hero, writes to his rescue, though, explaining that the real name of the islands is Pora Pora, which means firstborn. As legendary origins, Captain Cook, when he first heard the name, mistook the softened sound of the Tahitian P for B and called the island Bola Bola. How about that, Captain Cook? And also yesterday we were talking about De Rossi. Why has he got one shirt sleeve long, one short? And it's nothing to do with his tattoos, apparently, writes Albal T, who they're all quite classical. It's one of a goddess of Fortuna and the other one's a kind of a wedding vow thing. I'm pretty sure this goes back to when he was wearing a cast on his wrist. And so he had one shirt sleeve short, and then he just stayed with it even when the cast...
I have to say, I'm disappointed. Oh. I like the idea of there being a tattoo on his arm that was just so repulsive
right. That
he couldn't show it to the world.
Yes.
That's the idea I liked, and that's the one I'm sticking with.
Okay, good. Now, lots of Newcastle fans posting in. One or two erstwhile Newcastle fans posting in about the whole Joe Kinnear. You were away yesterday, Paul. You missed a lot.
I've caught up by listening to the sports bar with Andy Goldstein Talk Sports show in
right.
which the interview was contained. And this long and slightly rambly discussion they have with Joe Kinnear when he insists he's on the phone with Alex Ferguson every day,
yep.
asking him this, asking him that. You would have thought that Alex Ferguson might be like, well, actually, Joe, this is the 21st day on the trot. You phoned up and asked me questions about how to do your job properly. I have other things to do. Would you not leave me alone? But apparently not.
Wenger's another one who's on speed dial.
Yeah.
Shea Kinnear.
Yeah.
It's exciting, isn't it? He said so many great things. Apart from all the factual errors about players that he signed 3 years before he actually joined Newcastle and that. But the one I think that caught everyone's attention was when he called Derek Lambisi. And that's talked central, about having Johan Kebab.
Johan Kebab.
I do think that's... I'd like that to be adopted and for Newcastle to... basically allocate all of their players a random noun that sounds a bit like their name.
Right.
And on that basis, I look forward to the appointment of Joe Kanu. And I'd wonder how he'll get on with Alan Pardon.
very nice. It does seem an extraordinary thing. And one or two people asking now whether, as indeed there have been since the story first broke, whether he really is going to become the director of football there, or whether this is the product of a slightly less than well mind. Best wishes to all concerned. Anyway, Leo Miklash, I may have pronounced that wrongly, ironically, says, for all you Newcastle fans, please give us Hearts fans a mention. We're in a far worse situation today. Fan buyout at the_FOH needs support. They've announced they're going to be seeking administration. That's what, a likely 15-point penalty, transfer embargo, and basically all sorts of trouble.
Can I just take you back a moment?
Take me back.
Is that the suggestion that the club have neither confirmed nor denied Joe Kinnear's appointment?
There's still no official word from Newcastle.
Wow. So they're just not even bothering to reply to the fact that this guy's going on
there. I think they're very, very scared. There's somebody who was tweeting the front page of the Chronicle this morning, which came out in fairly unambivalent fashion against the appointment of Kinnear. And it doesn't seem that there's any support for this move anywhere.
But has it actually happened? The club haven't necessarily said that it's happened. Is that what I'm to understand? That's quite exciting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
That's how I'm going to go about getting my next job, is just turning up on this podcast and saying, well, I've just been made editor of the Times, so I'm quite happy about it. Not too keen on the paywall.
Right.
But really is a bastion of quality journalism.
Right. But can you open doors to newspaper editors all over the world, Paul?
Well, I'm looking forward to working with Doglin Moran, so right. That's my main thing.
Cool. It's a newspaper joke, that one. Right, okay, now on Wednesday we have two more games, and they might be a bit more evenly matched than Monday's excitements. Brazil taking on Mexico, huh? Brazil coming off two straight 3-0s. Michael, were you impressed by what you saw from the Seleção?
Yeah, I was actually. I saw them at Stamford Bridge in about February or March against Russia, and they were just shambolic, just all over the place. Scolari had only been there for two games at that point, but I just couldn't see them turning it around in such a short space of time. And it was only one competitive victory, but I thought the side looked cohesive. There was a couple of players, particularly Oscar, who I thought wasn't trying to be the big man. He wasn't trying to do everything. He was just facilitating everyone else. And Fred as well plays that role nicely, laying off for Neymar. So I was quite impressed with them. They're a better side than I expected already.
Well, one of our extensive team of people in Brazil for the Confederations Cup is, of course, Fernando Duarte. And I think we can speak to him now. Fernando!
Hello, James. Hello, guys.
Hi, Fernando. So, listen, so many questions then. Is Big Phil going to change things, or is he going to stick with the team that did so well against Japan?
Well, unless there are injuries, he's not going to change the lineup. He was pretty happy with what he saw from the team. He said that as long as they play with that kind of tactical balance, they can offer any team in the world a good game. They can beat any team in the world. It might be just a bit too enthusiastic about the 3-0 win over Japan, but in my opinion as well, this is the best, perhaps the best side I can put on. I know a lot of people complaining about Lucas Moura being on the bench and not playing ahead of Hulk. A lot of people saying, oh, hey, we could have brought other players in the four, and Nani should be a starter. But so far, from all the games I've seen, this was the game Brazil was more balanced. I'm not going to say there weren't problems. I think there's still some troubles with midfield, especially with the way they should close up midfield. Paulinho is a guy who likes to bump forward. It's like a wing sometimes. And Luis Gustavo was a bit overwhelmed at the end.
Mexico, are they big rivals? I know they beat Brazil last summer, but are they big rivals of the Seleção?
Well, the relationship used to be pretty kind of like a party relationship. Mexicans love Brazilian football after what happened in 1970. There was always this magical connection. There was always this deference towards Brazilian football, this respect, almost this worshipping. What happened is that Mexican football basically evolved, and they started beating Brazil in finals, in competition finals. Brazil lost to in two Gold Cup finals, and they took part of the Gold Cup, the CONCACAF Gold Cup, as guests. They lost to Mexico in the 1999 Confederations Cup final, and the Chilean Cup was losing the gold medal around the Olympics. So no other team, as long as I remember, has beaten Brazil in so many finals before, and apart from, you know, local rivals, Argentina and Uruguay. And this is becoming uncomfortable for Brazilians. And I think in the last 12 years, there have been 13 matches, and the Mexicans won like 8 or 9. So it's no other team has such a good head-to-head with Brazil so far.
Now, in the meantime, we're also seeing some extraordinary scenes of the protests that went on around Brazil on Monday. A lot of the games have been affected by these as well. Well, what's the latest?
Well, it's the Brazilian winter, isn't it? It's winter in Brazil, and a lot of protests are taking on the streets. Of course, the Confederations Cup and the World Cup are big, big, big baits for that. People are tired. And, of course, having a massive tournament with people looking at the country, people paying attention to Brazil, a lot of cameras everywhere. This is something that would kind of like catalyze and galvanize people. I think they should do it. We like to say we are a democratic country, but the police are losing their cool during the Italy and Mexico game. A lot of people were basically cornered in the local park, and there were families there. A lot of the protesters were basically mixed up with families, and everybody was gassed by the police. I think this is horrendous. This should be the last thing Brazilian authorities should be doing now. We should be able to let people protest, obviously, contain any kind of vandalism, and I'm not going to say there hasn't been vandalism. Some people broke shop windows in São Paulo, although São Paulo is not in the Confederations Cup now, but it will host the opening match there in the World Cup. So, I mean, I think both sides have done bad things, but the police certainly should have controlled things better. And unfortunately, this is going to mar the tournament. People are going to remember this is the tournament that Brazilians are basically up in arms against a lot of the authorities. Fortunately, some people are actually scared about coming here next year, but I haven't seen any foreigners being hit or anything like that. So this is the reality of this country, and people should know that instead of just thinking this is a huge beach with people playing football and just looking nice.
Fernando Duarte, extraordinary scenes, actually, on Monday evening, particularly of the demonstrations in Brasilia, where they climbed on top of the government building and where they attempted to storm the kind of legislative assembly in Rio. I don't know if you see it. And that amazing shot down the street of just the entire avenue occupied by people. Incredible. Incredible scenes, and shows no sign of abating.
It's quite far down the road, though, isn't it? I would have thought, all that spending on the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's much they can do about that. Yeah.
you kind of...
Thought maybe get that in a few
kind
years.
Kind of committed to that. Yeah. Right, well, there you go. What do you think about Brazil-Mexico, Simon?
Well, Mexico in poor form over the last... What? They've drawn 8 of their last 10 games.
Ooh.
Not scored a whole lot of goals. Over-reliant on the little P up front. But they beat Brazil last year. I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
Good.
But I expect the home side to win, really.
You do? Mm. Yeah. Paul?
I also expect the home side to win.
Good.
But that's just instinct.
Is it?
Based on knowledge.
They look like momentum's building with them, don't they? They're the settled side. They know what they're about.
Yeah, also there's just not a lot of intensity in this tournament. And so there's the pressure of the home expectation. They don't have to...
When you say intensity, do you mean like pressure?
I mean intensity on the field.
I thought the opening games have been fairly intense, actually. No?
Well, no. Okay. No, I didn't.
All right.
I mean, in patches, but right. I think if you were to compare it to it, it still has something of the air of a showcase about
right.
it, where people are trying to play beautiful football and get the crowd excited.
Right.
What there's been less of in this tournament compared with World Cups is people blathering on about how terribly hot it is. So I've been forced to try and judge for myself. I mean, I could have checked weather reports, I suppose. But I did notice in the opening match, I think it was Mexico's goalkeeper, was astonishingly sweaty in the first half, which...
Doesn't
bode well for England.
The Uruguayans were slick in an entirely wrong sense. They were absolutely drenched. They might be wearing the wrong kind of shirts, because, you know, that can be a question. Just out of curiosity, Paul, you were in Spain. Did you see the Spain game against Uruguay? Did you see it there?
I saw the second half.
Right, okay.
You know, which had the goals.
And what did the crowd go? Where did they go?
Well, they were kind of just as interested in the... they're just as interested in the under-21s at the moment.
Of course they are. Who are taking on Italy today?
Yes, exactly. Right. I think there's an advertising campaign that's running across terrestrial TV at the moment that has the team down as just... legends, and it's about the only thing that the country can really get enthusiastic about at the moment, and so I think that at this stage there's just a level of expectation that they will win, but as the tournament goes on, I'm sure anticipation will rise further.
Right. Okay, good. Italy's seniors meanwhile take on Japan on Wednesday. Japan managed by the Italian Ivan Zaccheroni, and given that the way they came into the tournament was so shambolic, it's been a pretty good start from Italy. I know you weren't overwhelmed by them, Simon. What did you think, Michael? The Italians against Mexico?
I thought a few players played well. I thought Pirlo, Di Ciglio, Giaccarini, I thought was excellent.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's I think of the 11, he's probably the least talented, right, if I can put it like that. But I thought he was excellent. And Balotelli as well. I didn't think Marchisio was very good at all. No. I'd expect more from him because I think he's quite good at linking the play. But I think this will be quite a good game because Japan are good. I mean, what Prandelli's done at Italy is he's made them more technical. They're better on the ball. They do retain it very well. And that's what Japan are good at as well. They like to get the ball down and play. But they're weak at either end. I don't really fancy Japan's centre-backs, and up front they don't have goals. So I think it could be quite a good technical game. But whether there's goals, I'm not sure.
Right. There you go. We'll find out on Wednesday, and we'll be back on Thursday morning to tell you what we thought. Simon?
Well, just there are some World Cup qualifiers that will actually qualify people for the World Cup happening today.
Really? Which are they?
Firstly, Australia are playing, I think, as we're recording, or it's about to kick off, against Iraq at home. And if they win, then they're in. And then there's a big match between South Korea and Iran later on, which is a bit of a grudge match. It's quite an interesting build-up to that match. When they played the reverse fixture in Iran, South Korea were really unhappy with the way they were treated and the facilities that they were given, and they lost, and they're promising to make Iran's captain weep tears of blood.
Really?
Yeah.
Like Le Chiffre in Casino Royale?
A bit like Le Chiffre in Casino Royale, yeah.
My God.
Yeah, it's a horrible image, but that's what they're promising, and so that happens later on.
There's no place for that kind of thing in sport, surely.
Tears of blood.
Always now and then. Tears of blood.
Yeah. Wow. I look forward to finding out more about that, Simon. Good. All right, then. That's it, then, for today. Many thanks to Michael Cox.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, Paul McInnes. No, thank you. And Simon Burton.
Yeah.
Good. All right, then. Thanks, producer Ben. Thanks, Fernando Duaje. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
CCFD with AC Jimbo. Whoa.